Yo everyone, welcome back. Brand new Techish, let's go. Michael Behane, Abadesi.
Ozan Sade.
Let's do it. Boom.
Say my name now. So yesterday I was at The Wing and...
What is The Wing if people don't know what it is, what The Wing is?
The Wing is a co-working space, community space, founded by two female founders in the US and now in a few cities all across America and here in London. They opened just a few months ago. It's a co-working space / members club. And what I really like about it are all the free events they put on for the community. So included in your membership are panels and talks. They've had people like Emma Dabiri, who wrote the book Don't Touch My Hair. And yesterday they had Cindy Gallup, who is an incredible entrepreneur, investor, campaigner. You might have heard of her Make Love Not Porn campaign.
It was a company, wasn't it, at one point?
Yeah, and she's also raising a sex tech fund to invest in women operating within that space. But yeah, she's just a powerhouse. Mm. As she says in her Twitter bio, I like to blow shit up. I am the Michael Bay of business.
Bad Boys 5.
So she comes from the world of advertising. And for the last few years has focused more on entrepreneurship and gender equality in entrepreneurship. And yes, innovations within porn and sex and all that kind of stuff. But what I really liked about her presentation yesterday was just how direct she was. Mm. You know, historically, there's been a lot of taboo, particularly in women's circles, around discussing money. Mm. I think a big part of it probably comes because, you know, for many, many decades, women didn't really actively manage a lot of money, right? Mm. Like if we think back to more traditional environments and traditional values. But yeah, she was just like, you know, don't be shy about having aspirations to earn more and ask for more, which I thought was really good. And she gave lots of tactics around negotiating and like your value. She was saying, you know, what you ask for is how people see you in terms of what you are worth.
Yeah.
So if you feel you are worth a lot because you're, you know, you add value, then ask for a lot. It's not about what you feel comfortable doing or whatever. It's what you know you are worth and what you deserve. And I think a lot of the time we don't really think about our value in terms of that. We overcompensate for the other side of the table too much.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I think
as
underrepresented people, even more so, because that imposter syndrome comes in and a part of us feels like, wait, can I ask for that? I mean, they could just find someone else who could do that. And it's like, you know, the minute you start going down that path of thinking, you're really in trouble. So I thought that was really cool. And she was like saying some really funny stuff. She was just like, bullshit like a straight white man does. And I was a bit like, you know, that kind of fake it till you make it thing. But it was also just speak with the confidence. I mean, look at Donald Trump sometime, you know what I mean? Or Boris Johnson. Like these people, they don't know what they're talking about, but they're just saying it so confidently that the whole world is just like, yeah, I got your back.
You know what? So speaking of money.
Yes, give me some.
There was a kind of reoccurring thing that happened on Twitter where a lot of software engineers essentially were kind of being transparent about how much they were getting paid and like where they're based and, you know, what's their equity compensation? Because I think the argument was that a lot of us, especially women, people of color, when it comes to negotiating, because of that lack of transparency, you're getting offered a lot less than what you deserve, right? So everyone's like, okay, cool, let's be out there and let's be transparent with it, right? I don't know, how do you feel about it? Cause I like the sentiment and I think it has a lot of power in helping people.
Yeah.
But it also does feel a bit, I don't know, maybe this is why the culture has to shift, was even
it's
I was
British.
Sitting there, yeah, I was seeing people, I don't know, to me it felt a bit wrong to a certain extent.
Feels vulgar.
Yeah, it feels a bit vulgar, that's the thing, because I'm like, even the amounts that I'm seeing people throw up, I'm just like, oh my days, like, I don't think you guys know how rich you are, like...
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, I'm just like, I got 300K, you know. I know that it mean well. And it comes from a place of, like, I want to help people so they know what they're negotiating with, right? But I don't know if Twitter was the correct forum for that.
Well, as the OP original poster said, he was blown away most of all by the responses from underrepresented people.
Right.
Like, people who already suspect they might be discriminated against because of their background. And I feel like that alone is worth the potential discomfort, awkwardness, or frustration. And
that's real.
You know what? It is difficult to see. And, you know, comparison is the thief of joy. As soon as we know that someone else has more than us, it's just like, oh, I don't even like my job anymore.
Yeah.
But I think we need more of this. Honestly, we need more of this. And I think, you know, in America, I believe an employer cannot include in the employment contract that you are not allowed to disclose your salary. But here in the UK, we still have companies where employers can do that. So if you're caught discussing your comp with another employee, you get fired.
Yeah, that's real. I remember just even asking somebody what they were getting as an intern, and I was an intern and I wanted to know, and they were like, we can't talk about that, it's not allowed.
And I just and I find like, that crazy.
That's mad. I didn't know that.
Someone needs to legislate to government about that, because that is what's
SBS.
Keeping, you know, ethnic pay gap,
gender pay gap, yeah.
Muslim pay gap, disabled pay gap, all that stuff is entrenched as long as we don't have the freedom to talk about these things.
But you know what? You know how you were saying how like it's for the underrepresented folk and whatever, right? This it almost seemed to have the opposite effect, because I was seeing people, and I mentioned to you off mic, people that are like high profile white dudes at Facebook who are based in like the London office as opposed to the US office. And people are like, whoa, man, you're so underpaid. Like, can we do like a Patreon for you? Because this person,
what?
This person was quite prominent. They're quite prominent in terms of helping popularize a Facebook programming language. I don't want to go into too much details. And the person essentially was on 100K, which in US terms is very low. In UK terms, 100K is pretty much, you're very well paid.
To be a senior engineer.
To be a senior engineer, not just that, to be a front-facing senior engineer who's popularizing and there to kind of explain.
Like community builder as
community
well.
Community builder,
right, yeah.
Like one of Facebook's major, you know, projects, which is their programming language. It's hard to not explain who the person is because I'm going into like, it's so vague right now. But anyways, it had the opposite effect, because people were like, yeah, like, how do we donate to you? Because you're like, you're so important to the community and you're not getting what you deserve, right? So I'm not hating on it. He probably is underpaid.
But at the same time, that's not a reflection on this guy's bad negotiation skills. It's a reflection on the flaws of our economy. I can name like a dozen people who I rely on for information, entertainment, insight, who are probably earning a fraction of what I earn right now.
That's real. I think it showcases the fact that one of the most biggest determining factors of how much you earn is just your location and what country you're born into.
Absolutely.
I think I read it in 23 Rings, they don't tell you about capitalism. The bus driver in Sweden earns 50 times the bus driver in India, but the bus driver in India probably is probably a better driver because the roads are not as good, whatever, right? So obviously this is not as bad of an example, but it's like, yeah, the engineers in the valley, those salaries don't necessarily translate anywhere else to anyone who's a developer in any other major city.
It's a privilege to work in Silicon Valley. Most people can't even get a visa.
Yeah, real talk.
If you're looking for a new start, check out Pocket Jobs. That's PocitJobs.com. PocketJobs.com. It's a career platform for people of color in the tech industry looking to level up. It's used by tons of startups, nonprofits, and large tech companies looking to find amazing candidates of color for the tech roles. Link in the show notes.
So I want to talk about my experience on TV, not just so I can brag, humble brag, but just so that I can also give a fair warning to anybody else who might be in that position where they
live
have to go on TV.
Live television.
Yes. So the segment that I was asked to be on was about stuff that we talk about in tech-ish, essentially stuff about children having access to smartphones, right? And it was very last minute, so I had to kind of come up with a spiel pretty quick. And they were like, yeah, like, so we're going to talk about, you know, the stuff and like, what's your intro? Like, so we can talk about who you are as a person, right? What your companies that you're doing. And obviously as an entrepreneur, you want them to plug what you're doing, because I'm going there to talk about something that isn't necessarily related to my company. They're like, yeah, so what's your thing? I said, yeah, peopleofcolorandtech.com, techish podcast. Cool. All of a sudden, so I'm sat next to the host now. I can see she gets a little message in her earpiece. Yeah, technology expert. Just call him a technology expert.
Oh my God.
And then they were like, and roll cameras. And they were like, here's Michael Payne, technology expert. I was like, damn. So if you are ever going to go on TV, just be forewarned that like you're not necessarily going to be able to push it in the narrative that you want. You don't have complete control of that. It was still a wonderful experience and I'm really appreciative that I came on. But I just wanted to say, like, if you are, because I had a few other entrepreneurs hit me up and say like, oh, like,
where was your techish t-shirt?
Yeah, people were saying I should have been more flagrant with it and just wore a techish t-shirt, for example, right?
I said that.
Yeah,
I
you said that. Yeah, and other people backed you up. But yeah, like, so be careful if you do go on TV, you're not necessarily going to have the chance to kind of spin it in the way that you want per se.
No.
So that was a fun little tangent.
But you still got your face out there.
I got my face out there. Whoop, whoop.
I was just going to start off with some audience reflections.
Yeah, go on.
So public service announcement.
Yep.
Do not drive while listening to Techish, apparently.
Apparently it's dangerous. If you're driving right now, we need to pull up.
Pull over into, what do you call that? Hard shoulder. Basically, I don't drive either.
Terrible. So apparently you might end up laughing and hurt yourself. Don't do that.
That's so funny because I actually listened back to the episode and I was like, where was the funny bit?
It probably wasn't funny.
I knew it didn't come from you. I was listening to
hater.
Listening for my punchlines. So that was the first one. I also appreciated how many folks reflected on which board they would like to sit on.
So what were the interesting ones? So we asked a couple episodes ago, what company boards would you like to sit on, essentially? And people gave us some feedback. Interesting ones.
So Sally's Beauty. from ENEA, Black and Brown Founders, which I thought was quite interesting. And there's definitely a lot of those. So it's like a high street, you know, chain, basically beauty store. Been around for a while, but could probably do with some work in terms of catching up with the digital first economy.
That's a good point.
I don't know why I'm speaking the Queen's English. I'm trying to get my Meghan Markle on over here. We also had a few apparel brands surfaced too, which I thought was quite interesting. What I like most of all was that people were just picking companies that they had a real affinity with.
Yeah, I think I saw Fenty Beauty, right? Rihanna's company there.
Yes.
Somebody else also said Starbucks.
Oh, yeah.
Starbucks? I don't know about that one.
Well, you know, they're making money.
They're making
moolah. And when those black guys got arrested at Starbucks, they enforced, like, they made everyone have a day off.
Yeah.
To diversity inclusion training, which is the quickest I've seen any company react.
I mean, for them to shut down all of their stores, that's a big move, considering how much revenue they lost in that one given day.
Yeah.
I'm actually been reading I found a book in a charity store, and it's the founder of Starbucks, Howard Schultz, right? I mean, I don't necessarily know if he's a good guy or a bad guy in terms of holistically, but the book is quite interesting. He grew up in the projects. Grew up in the hood, essentially, and got a scholarship to uni, became a sales guy. And then from there, Starbucks had already existed for 10 years. He joined as an employee. Okay. And then from there, he kind of took it in a different direction and whatever. I just found it interesting because I have a few friends of mine that are like salespeople and are not necessarily the creative types to come up with the idea and to be like, oh, like, I've got this great idea for an app. But if you aren't that person, like a lot of my friends aren't, being the salesperson is still quite powerful.
Oh, gosh.
Being the person who can pick up the phone and just be like, yo, this is the product we're doing, whatever, get me the meeting. I'm gonna and because a lot of us who are the developers who see themselves as more creative, we're scared of doing that. Mm. That's the hard part. The hard part is actually getting the meetings, getting in front of budget holders, selling the product, right? So don't feel
asking for stuff.
Asking for stuff.
Sales is so underrated. I say this to people who I mentor all the time, where they're like, oh, like, I don't have any technical skills. Oh, blah, blah, blah. I'm not sure. And I was just like, BD.
Yeah.
Go into BizDev.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, but I don't know what it is, blah, blah. I was like, you're doing it right now.
Yeah.
You're talking to me. You managed to get me to give you my time.
Yeah.
To help you out. Now you've managed to get me to give you my advice.
Yeah.
Like, you've already negotiated. Do you know what I mean? Like, so yeah, I always tell people that. A couple other companies are just going to shout out SoundCloud. Someone said SoundCloud because they thought it would be Kyra. That she thought it'd be cool to work for a music label.
They've been struggling though, haven't they, for quite some time to find a model to make it work, right?
I think they're just, it's one of those things where the music industry is already so, like, divided into, like, who makes money and who makes a lot of it and who doesn't, you know, whether it's major labels, touring companies, etc. And I think SoundCloud just kind of struggled because it couldn't really get that major label market.
Yeah. And also, I think copyright issues, people were, like, throwing up tracks that had, like, other people's beats. And when they had to enforce copyright, it was difficult. Also, I remember you...
I used to host a podcast on
SoundCloud. Before Techish, how dare you?
I know, man. Yeah, OG podcast over here. But yeah, we used to just, like, cut up tracks of other people's songs. And then we were like, oh, wait, actually, we don't have...
The right to do that?
The right to do
that. But that's what made SoundCloud such a creative place, though. So many artists blew up off there because they could just quickly throw up tracks, do mixes and whatever. But it wasn't technically legal, so... Shout out to SoundCloud. What else?
Oh, Square. Someone also said Square. It's interesting because I feel like point of sale payments is becoming quite heated up space.
Yeah, I think it's turning into a commodity, to be honest. I mean, I used Square for Techish Live and the product was amazing. It was seamless. It was really well designed.
How much was that?
I can't remember.
Is it a subscription?
No, it's not.
Just processing fee.
Process fee, basically, right? Mm-hmm. And it was affordable and it was like... The UI was intuitive. It gave you that Apple feel. The packaging was really minimalistic and white and whatever, right? So shout out to Square. I mean, I don't know enough about what they're doing on their other end. I think they've got a few software products and a few, like, they're doing crypto, you know what I'm saying? And maybe, like, stock and stuff like that. But I don't know. I mean, payments is going to be huge.
I don't know how Jack Dorsey is CEO of Twitter Square and doing all his yoga retreats and saving Nigeria.
Because you can't do that, bruv. I'm going to be like, can I be the CEO of two companies simultaneously?
It's like they're telling women around the world we can't even be mid-level management. Meanwhile, this guy's got two C-suite jobs.
I rate Jack Dorsey. He's a very creative individual, obviously. And, you know, the initial inception of creating Twitter where it was just like all about limitation, all about, because you can go online and find the initial sketch of the UI of Twitter and it hasn't changed that much, right? So he's a very creative entrepreneur, but yeah, I don't think it's right that he can be the CEO of two public companies simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, he's in charge of how many billions of dollars of public of the public market's money. To me, it's
meanwhile, he's going to be spending more time in Africa.
Yeah, he's not Elon. I think Elon could just about get away with it. I don't think Jack should.
God, this myth of Elon.
Come on, don't be a hater. That's a hater. Come on.
I am not a hater, but I'm just saying, like, he's not that amazing.
He kind of sort of is, like.
So curious to hear your thoughts on this.
Right.
Some hustle advice, hustle tips. Someone recently reached out to me, they're a product manager.
Mm-hmm.
And their company, their startup, the startup they work at, to be clear, had been acquired by another company that didn't have a great reputation mm-hmm. for its acquisitions. So right. it seemed to be a kind of, you know, rape and pillage vibe.
Wow. Got you.
that might be a bit too harsh a description. Strong, but yeah, but got you. You know what I mean? Just like rated of what it's good.
Corporate raiders. Right, yeah.
There you go. And so they said to me, how should I assess my next best move, given, you know, I was happy in the company, but now there's a lot of uncertainty on the road ahead.
I think, yeah, you've got to be frank and assess, you know, what is the track record of the company and the companies they've acquired? Is it like shut down within 2 years? Are they swallowed whole by the existing company? And do you want to work for that new company? I mean, I would be looking at my options, keeping it real. Depending on how many options I do have, my eyes will be wandering.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I mean, there's no loyalty in this game. Let's keep it real. If you're an employee, like, you've just got to go for what's best for you, because everyone's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So F it. Keeping it real.
I said a similar thing. I was like, first of all, reread your employment contract.
Okay, that's good.
And understand your rights again. Absolutely. Like, you know, what are the terms by which you can be terminated? Yep. Would you be owed severance, gardening leave? Like, basically, what's the vibe on that front?
Yeah.
Secondly, what do you want? What do you want? Like, are you willing to like hold on to the bitter end because you don't feel like job hunting right now?
Right.
Are there other options that you can explore? You know, if the cost of the uncertainty is so great on your mental and physical health, it's just not worth it to stick around, then by all means don't.
Yeah.
But if you've got a bit saved, you can keep saving with that next paycheck that's guaranteed to come through, then maybe you're not in so much of a hurry. But yeah, I just said start with the employment contract.
Yeah.
Just remember what you have the rights to, what happens if the company goes into administration, what happens if, and then just take it from there.
Check out Abid SE's Hustle Crew. Hustle Crew is on a mission to make the tech industry more productive and inclusive through talks, training, and mentorship. Link in the show notes.
So here's another scenario. So someone in my circle recently felt that they had 5x burnout.
What does that mean?
I think it just means they were super burnt out.
They're super burnt out.
Yeah.
Five times the normal size of burnout. Okay, yeah. Got you. Yeah.
So like reflecting on past times I've felt burnout, I feel multiples of that right now in this moment.
So you feel burnout right now?
I'm talking about the person.
Oh, got you. Sorry, go on.
I'm okay.
You're okay.
I'm coasting on the edge, but anywho, so this person is working at a startup,
mm-hmm.
is in a very hands-on role. Like public facing, and as a consequence of that, feels that they can't necessarily turn off, switch off.
Right.
And they found themselves in a situation where they didn't necessarily know how to be either like push back or create boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
They felt that they were working all the time.
Yeah.
And when they weren't working, they were, you know, sleeping, eating, and et cetera. So for people who find themselves in this position, maybe they're not senior enough in their company, senior enough in their role, or even just experienced enough in general to find that way to articulate, I don't have the resource, I don't have the capacity or whatever. People that just feel that they're always on this cycle of like rushing to finish everything, burnt out, burnt out.
So is the problem that their employers are not understanding and they're pushing them, or is the problem that they are not giving themselves the kind of space to kind of take a break?
I think it's both. I think, you know, we live in a world where companies are always going to try and squeeze more out of you.
They're going to take advantage of you, right?
And at the same time, so in a way, you know, we talked about this before, how I said there's going to be a backlash against remote working sooner than we think.
Yeah.
As much as a company employs us to do stuff, they don't necessarily take it upon themselves to manage our relationship with our work, right?
Right, yeah.
We have to take that responsibility. Yeah.
I don't know what to say. I think you're probably best to speak to this. I'll keep it real. Because I think my experience as an entrepreneur is very different than what somebody would have with employment.
Right.
Do you see what I'm saying? As in, I have...
Talk to me about that, though. In what way?
So, I had to set, you know, a few rules with myself. I had to negotiate with myself because there's a part of me that wants to keep working hard because I know that there's money on the table, there's money on the line, and I know that I have an opportunity that not many people have in the sense that I've got a company that's working. I've had companies that have failed before, so I know that, yo, this isn't promised. So there's that part of myself that's like, don't mess this up, keep going, don't stop. And then there's the part of myself that's also like, yo, fam, life's rushing by. You're not necessarily having the most fun. You're exhausted. You're tired. You're jeopardizing your personal relationships and stuff. You've got to kind of find a semblance of work balance. And I have that internal dialogue at all times, most of the time. So, and I struggle to find, you know, the balance. I went on holiday recently. That was a good thing.
Jamaica.
Yeah, I went to Jamaica. Bad impersonation. I won't do that again.
sorry, my Jamaican people.
Sorry, my Jamaican fam.
I just love that accent so much. I always try to do it. Okay, sorry.
So yeah, I'll let you answer in terms of the corporate world. I think as an entrepreneur, what I would recommend to all other entrepreneurs is this, and I stole this from Tim Ferriss, is if you have got the resources, do book a holiday for yourself. Okay, a long break, maybe 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks, if possible, what? 2 weeks max minimum. Okay. Right, where you're off the grid, you are not contactable, you are not able to work on your company, right? What will happen is you will develop systems to allow you to do that. And when you come back from your holiday, your company will and your life will be better for it. So in order to take that 2 weeks,
I see.
You will end up designing your company processes in a way where you are no longer completely beholden to everything 24/7. And that's what I kind of did. I didn't really speak on it, but that was my intention. I ended up bringing some people on board, outsourcing a few things,
yes.
And now that I've come back, I've got a better grip on things. It's very easy to creep back into the old way.
Yes,
it's very easy to, but like I've it's been for the best. Obviously, it's a very privileged thing. If you're starting a company right now, you're thinking, what's my man talking about going on a 2 week holiday? That's not happening. I'm a bit further down the line, a couple years in, but if anybody else is a couple years in, that's one thing I'd recommend.
You're more than a couple years in. You're like 4 years
in. Yeah, 4 years in. I think I'm just in denial. Yeah, it's almost like 5 years, fam. Yeah. It's mad. I think on the 5th year, I will celebrate.
That's useful.
Because I think...
You better.
Because I think, what's the odd? Like, what's the odds about, what did I say? Most
it's
companies.
Like single digit percentage.
Yeah, so if I make it 5 years, woo, let me know, jinx it.
Baller. Yeah, I think that's really good advice. I don't often find myself quoting Tim Ferriss, but.
Don't hate Tim.
he makes a lot of sense in that particular point. I've actually been doing this with Hustle Crew as well, where I've realized the company I started 3.5 years ago is a different company to the one I'm leading now, and similar to that point, I was like, too much of how we operate and who we work with is in my head, and it needs to be in CRM, and too much about how we decide who we will work with and who we don't is also in my head and needs to be in a decision-making framework so that all of these things can be delegated. And I think solopreneurs like us really struggle with that. Like I'm basically now on the really steep edge of a learning curve where I'm growing my team and I'm delegating responsibilities which I have previously had to contractors and freelancers who are probably going to be a lot better at it than me because this is their skill set and I'm just kind of generalist running around. But yeah, it is really tough. But
do you foresee a future where even when you're hired to come in to consult that it won't necessarily even be you that goes in?
Oh, totally. I mean, I already have
that dream.
That's 100% the dream. I know that if I want to achieve our mission, I have to find a way to scale it. And that means that I'm not always going to be doing everything. And I'm really fortunate that the mission resonates with so many people. Like I already have two other people facilitating and that's what we need
awesome.
Now.
I didn't know
that. But like over time, hopefully we'll get more. And yeah, that's definitely. I think that would be great. But yeah, to your point around how does one avoid that cycle of overextending, burning out and then coming back to it again. I think, I don't want to lie, I do know how hard it is, especially when you're in your first few jobs, especially if you have never had the experience of running a business yourself. So it's very difficult for you to know that, you know, one of the things that I've learned as a founder myself is that founders are good at getting you to work for them.
Yeah.
I will squeeze every last drop out of you.
Okay.
And if I get, like, but, you know, because I'm always looking ahead. I'm always looking at what's next. And if I can get more out of you, then that's going to get me to my goal quicker. And then I can set a new goal and then we can get there. And I think when you first start out in work, you only really understand your own personal incentives. And you don't understand that everyone around you has different incentives and different motivations. And that means sometimes when you say things like, oh, I need more help with this, or I'm already stretched on that, not everyone is listening.
That's
not
true.
Everyone is remembering. Not everyone is prioritizing your needs because everyone's prioritizing their goals. So I would say that's like the first thing to remember when you find yourself really like exasperated or at a loss, because it's very easy to default to that thinking of, well, why is everyone doing this to me? You know, I've said this, I've said that, no one's helping me. And like a lot of the time, like it's not really about you.
Yeah.
It's just about other things that are going on. And then the second thing I'd say is, you know, focus on what you have achieved and keep records of those results and let those be the anchor of the conversation. So instead of having to start a conversation about struggling with capacity or struggling with workload in a negative way, you can start it with, hey, so over the last 4 weeks, we've hit this target, that target. We were over that target by X percent. And now as I look at the next month and those targets, I'm realizing that it's going to be really hard for me to meet those unless something is taken off my plate.
That's a good point. I think that's a great strategy. Is there a chance, for example, if you have friends that are treating you a certain way?
Yes.
You can tell them, listen, I don't want to be treated this way. And you can have new behaviors and new boundaries. But there's also a chance where, you know what, perhaps we've crossed the bridge too far now. You are so toxic to me. You behave in a certain way. You're trained to treat me in a certain way that I've got to go off and meet new people.
Yes.
Is it a lot easier, instead of training your current employer to say, this is my new boundaries now, to just go to a new company and say, and start with boundaries, as opposed to trying to, because I think people are very bad at changing their behavior towards somebody. Like if you hired somebody, for example, and then, you know, they will always work into like 7 or 8, and then all of a sudden at 4 o'clock, their phone's on airplane mode. You're going to be like, what? Like, you're going to be in for a shock. Whereas if they started that way, fair enough. Right. So, is that a problem also, that you might be better off just going somewhere new
with the
new boundaries?
I feel like that is the solution only if you've accepted that you are not the problem.
Got you.
And what I'm saying is sometimes we are also the problem.
Understood.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because you're right, people don't change. But that applies as much to me as an employee as it does to my employer.
Right.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I always love that saying, there's no geographical solution to a psychological problem.
What does that mean?
So it means if I am bad, let's say, at enforcing boundaries, communicating about my capacity, pushing back with reason on things that, you know, I'm overcommitting to, it doesn't matter whether I'm working with you here or I'm working with Jane over there, because I'm bringing those same challenges with me.
Thanks for listening, everybody. That's been Brand New Techish. We'll be back next week as usual. Use the hashtag Techish if you have any thoughts on what we said.
Jump into the convo,
join us, and we'll catch you next week. And support us on Patreon, patreon.com/techish.